Blog Talk Radio.
Secret password is tractor. Today's early bird secret password is tractor.
When you find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking, there is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens. My co-host is Pat Foreman, author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles. Today is Monday, September 10th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and, of course, living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's gqfradio.com.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Snap Lock Chicken Coops, the American-made, maintenance-free, plastic hen house. With its double-wall construction and adjustable ventilation, it's the perfect year-round home for your small flock. It will not fade or rot and is unaffected by rain, sun, heat, cold, or chemicals. The removable litter and nesting trays make cleaning a breeze. Every access point is lockable for maximum predator resistance. Snap-lock chicken coops weigh just 40 pounds and snap together in minutes. So spend more time enjoying your flock and less time building and maintaining your coop. For additional information, please visit snaplockchickencoops.com. Also available at mypetchicken.com, critter-cages.com, and chickensforbackyards.com.
It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. It is Marvelous Monday, as Pat would say. And, of course, since she's joining us today, let's just go ahead right now and bring her live. As you know, she is the compost queen herself, all-around great person, author of many great titles. It is the one, the only, the lovely, on the road, Pat Forman. Hey, Pat, you're calling from out there in California, aren't you?
I am. I'm right now in Petaluma, California, and this week is the National Heirloom Expo. It's the second year for it, and it's just grown absolutely enormously because there is so much interest in heirloom foods and heirloom seeds, and it's just absolutely fabulous. So, yeah, I'm having a wonderful time. Of course, I decided not to take my private jet. I did go United instead. So, but I had a great flight coming out. It was just, it went really fast, and
much nicer when you're in first class. I know how it is, Pat.
Yeah. It would have been.
Yeah,
it would have been. But you know, I usually get pretty lucky on the seating, because even though the flight was pretty full, there was a seat between me and the other person in that 3-seat row, so we were still able to spread out a little bit. So anyway, that was a wonderful place called Terrace, and doing they are raising. As well, they do about 200 broilers a week, and they feed the local restaurants and local customers.
Okay.
It's just amazing out here.
I'm going to have you call right back in. You were breaking up quite a bit. We didn't get any of that last story you had talked about. I heard broilers and 200 a week, and that was it out of everything you just said. So I'm going to go ahead and have you call back in, see if you can get on a better cell connection. Yep, still breaking up. I didn't even hear you answer. So go ahead and just call back in, and we'll bring her back on live. We've got a great show lined up for you today, folks. We've got Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of First State Vet Supply. You can visit him online, firststatevetsupply.com. Today's topic, Peter's going to be talking all about vitamins. You know, he's going to get in-depth into vitamins, about how important they are in our flock. Are they important with our flock? How we can deliver the vitamins that are needed in our flock, other than just nutritionally balanced feed. And so vitamins is today's topic. So get those Chicken Whisperer notebooks out. And get ready to take lots of notes. Again, keeping your flocks healthy from the experts. And so that'll be today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Tomorrow, we welcome the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy, and we will be broadcasting live, and they will be broadcasting live from the Heirloom Festival out there in California. Tomorrow, we'll be interviewing a lot of the vendors there, and that's tomorrow's show. This coming Wednesday, we're really hoping to have Toby with Crazy K Farm on to tell us all about her new breakthrough products for backyard poultry. Of course, you know her as the maker of the famous Hen Saver Hen Apron. She sold over 10,000 of those. She's got the Birdie Bra. She's now got the birdie booty that goes on the foot of an injured foot of a chicken. So we're hoping to have her on this coming Wednesday. And then Thursday, of course, is Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Backhoe Magazine. And I believe this Thursday's topic is preserving apples the old-timey way. Preserving apples the old-timey way. And then another fun Friday this coming up Friday. All right, how cool is that? So looking forward to this week's programming here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We've got a great lineup, so hopefully you can join us every day, Monday through Friday at 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Like we always say, if you can join us daily, not only will your day go by faster, but your week will go by faster as well. And next thing you know, it will be Friday here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Let's get on over here, and we'll bring Pat back on, see if she's got a better connect on her cell signal. Hey, Pat, welcome back.
Yeah, I hope that's better, Whisper. I am driving, and I hit a hole in some of these hills out here in California. I mean,
no problem.
Yeah, so I'll keep a signal as long as I can. I ought to be on the interstate here pretty soon, and it'll be pretty steady.
Okay.
And by the way, I have a 1 o'clock meeting, so I need to sign off at 1, unfortunately.
No problem whatsoever.
So sorry I sort of stuttered out. I know that's really frustrating to our listeners. But I was saying there's a farm where they're hosting me. I'm staying in their guest room, and they have 1,000 CSA membership, and they are raising about 200 broilers a week to sell to local restaurants and to their CSA. They mainly sell direct to customers. So it's just an amazing operation here.
Yeah, that's awesome. And, of course, tomorrow I was telling everybody that the ALBC will be on along with you, I think, there, and they'll be having some guests and some vendors there on the air.
Right. I mean, they always let me hang out at their booth and sell some books there if I don't have a – so I talked with Jeanette yesterday. She's coming in today, and we're going to have a great time there too. I mean, this heirloom festival, I'm hoping to see these all across the country. I think they're just absolutely the way that we need to go to get away from the GMOs and really get back to true health care in our culture. So I think
fabulous.
This picture high, and I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, that
Did
is
Did I say
fabulous,
I'm really excited
though.
About it? I mean, I'm really excited about it. What can I say? How excited I am about these heirloom festivals.
With
okay.
Pat is so excited, I can hear her right now.
Oh, yeah! Who needs coffee when I've got heirloom festivals, you know? Just makes me manic. I get so charged.
Well, I'm looking
anyway.
Forward to doing some work with you at the ALBC, speaking of ALBC, at the ALBC annual conference coming up here on the 9th and 10th of November in Cary, North Carolina. Huge, huge conference with the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. I will be presenting on getting started with backyard poultry. This will be designed for the beginner in mind, and since laws all around the Raleigh, Triangle, Durham, Cary, Wake Forest area, they have done tremendous work in that area to get backyard poultry allowed. And I know Cary right now they're working on getting the laws changed there. So that should be a pretty full class, I'm hoping, for getting started. If you've kept chickens really under 2 to 3 years, then this is something you might be wanting to sign up for. And then Pat's going to have a presentation and just tons and tons of great guests, speakers that are going to be there. Well worth your time and wild if you can attend, especially if you own a small homestead, because they'll be talking about all type of animals, not just heritage chickens, but all kinds of other heritage farmstead and homestead animals. So if you can make it, just visit albc-usa.org. That's their website, www.albc-usa.org, and click on that event. You can see the whole guest lineup and what days we're going to be there and when we're speaking and how much it costs to attend, the whole nine yards. So definitely looking forward to seeing you there, Pat, as well as the heritage chef Steve Pope and Jeanette Behringer and a whole bunch of others that we've had on the show in the past.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they expect to be really well-fed. I mean, not just a little bit, but really, really well-fed, because a lot of the members raise livestock, heritage livestock, of course, and they make donations, and they've got special chefs, of course, of which Steve Pope, our heritage chef, our very own, is often doing a workshop or preparing the foods himself. So It's a triple treat, and they're just the kind of people you want to know. I can tell you that.
Yeah.
Is Harvey going to be there?
No, not that I know of. Not this year, anyway. I'm going to get to see Harvey pretty soon. He's almost a neighbor of mine up there in Northern Virginia. So we ought to get him on the show here too, Whisper.
Let me ask you this too, while it's on my brain, because if not, I'll forget. Have you heard any update from Margie Stancil?
Yes and no. She won her case about her chickens being an aviary.
She
that
won
was
that.
Totally. And I might be breaking up.
No,
that was thrown out.
Awesome. That was the latest one that I heard. She was going to court a couple of weeks ago because she won all of her other cases she went to court with, and they just have a vendetta against her. They're harassing her now, trying to pull anything they can out of their governmental hat, trying to force her to get rid of these chickens. She went, and that's so fabulous. I'll be out in the garden or working, and she'll pop into my head about, hey, I need to call her or get in contact with her and see if she won or not. So I'm so glad the latest one regarding them trying to say she had an aviary was thrown out. That is fabulous news.
Right. And I think this is the last one, too, because what happened is because they so harassed her, the county officials, the elected officials, they so harassed her that it got such sympathy from the local people that they showed up in mass to support her. So I think it's done even more than just sort of throwing her case out at this point. It's really charged people towards wanting to have chickens because, doggone it, it's their constitutional right, to raise their own food on land they owned. So that goes with the International Declaration of Human Rights has a paragraph or has a sentence in there about food written by Eleanor Roosevelt during World War II, but it has a paragraph in there about how people have a right to food. So they've got Montgomery County's all Virginia. Montgomery County, Maryland is now sort of poised to really change their laws and get going in mass. Pretty cool, huh?
That is awesome that she got the local support she needed, and hopefully that just really showed those elected officials who's in charge, that they work for us and they are public servants, and hopefully it embarrassed them about having such a vendetta, personal vendetta against her.
Yeah,
and I'm so glad that they lost.
Vendetta.
That's so awesome. Good for her. I'll try to give her a call or reach out to her and congratulate her on that win. So that's super.
That would
super.
Mean a lot, Whisper. She's going through a really hard time now, and I think just a call to congratulate her would mean a lot to Margie.
Absolutely. That is fabulous. Well, it's garden time. I woke up early this morning, headed out to the garden. We've got plants going in. Hopefully today we'll get the all the plants in, which plant-wise that we're planting. We've got broccoli and cauliflower and cabbage and lettuce. And then as far as seed-wise, let me see if I can count here. We've got carrots, turnips, collards, beets, and maybe one more thing that I just can't put my hand on right now. But also in the next couple of weeks, we'll get our onion sets in as well. So a little bit smaller garden than we had last year, which is fine, but still more than enough to feed our family and then to donate a lot back to the community like we did last year. So today and tomorrow, according to the almanac, is planting day. We've been working up to today and tomorrow, so I had to take a little break, come in to do the show. After the show, we'll be heading back out and doing a little bit more planting to get that done today. And then I'll do a little bit more work in the garden to find out where I'm going to get these seeds and put them out, what rows, and assign that so tomorrow we can get them in, because I do try to plan according to the almanac as best as that I can. So, and of course, what couldn't have a better day? We walk outside and it's about 59 to 61 degrees, and the sun's out,
nice.
Not a cloud in the sky. Yeah, I think the whole country is experiencing this nice cool front that came through last few days. So I think this is just fabulous. And so it wasn't bad out there at all, getting those plants in the ground, and really looking forward to the fall garden. And Caleb was out there with me, which is great. I mean, who needs a television and video games when you've got a garden. So good education for him, and that's the one reason why we moved down here. You know, we bought the place down here 5 years ago in anticipation of when we have kids to move here, because we didn't want to raise them in a subdivision in Atlanta. And soon enough, we found out Jen was pregnant, and you know, 3 weeks later, so we started renovating the house down here and getting things done. And then 3 weeks after Caleb was born, we moved. That was it. We were living our plan, and then we're down here, so glad we can raise him down here in this environment, and then up there in that environment. And Pat, you may have been absent the day that Jen and I announced that Caleb's going to be a big brother.
I was absent that day, but I've certainly heard through the grapevine.
Okay,
so, do you have a name picked out?
Not yet. Of course, we don't know if it's going to be a girl or boy yet. We're thinking probably around Christmas we may know. And we had boy and girl when she got pregnant the first time. So we've got, I think, a couple of girls' names we like, but a boy's names, she's got a couple in her mind that she likes. I think if the two girls' names we had picked out when we found out we were pregnant with Caleb, which obviously was a boy, but the two girl names we had were Haley Catherine, and then the other one was Lily Ann. And so now we're...
Oh, I love Lily.
I love Lily, too. So I love that, too. So now Jen's kind of... We were in the car the other day compromising, thinking, well, maybe Lily Catherine, just because she likes Catherine, because of her grandmother, I think, was Catherine. And then we both like Lily, so now we're thinking maybe Lily Catherine. We'll see. But if it's a boy, I have no idea. Of course, many of you know that I tried to get Jen to call Caleb Stonewall. But obviously, that didn't fly, obviously. We've got Caleb now and not Stonewall, but maybe that can be his nickname here around the homestead, Stonewall.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, I have to let you know that I have a chicken. I have a hen named Lily, so you can honestly say that she was named after her chicken.
There you go. Our neighbor has a dog named Lily, so, hey, what are you going to do? But she's thinking maybe, I think she had, let me think, I know one of the boys' names that she's mentioned was, I think, Eli, a good biblical name, Eli, and I'm thinking, and the other one was Levi, and I don't really like Levi at all, personally. May grow on
sounds
me.
Like jeans, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm not, just not a fan, but Eli, kind of growing on me, and again, good biblical name like Caleb is, but who knows, we'll just see. Those are just some that we've been thrown out, so we'll see.
In African cultures, what many of them will do, not all, of course, but many, is they'll wait till after the child is born and then ask the ancestors and ask the child what its name is. It just sort of comes up and evolves. And sometimes it's very surprising. That's just a thought. You probably want a name before you're born, though.
Yeah, well, just like I said, we'll see what happens. Of course, you know, boy or girl, everybody's like, oh, whatever it is, we'll be happy, and that's pretty much true.
That's
another
right.
But when you start thinking about the nitty gritty, Pat, you think, okay, if we have another boy, then we won't probably have to buy any clothes because we'll have, you know, they'd be so close together that, you know, let's see, I guess Caleb will be about, the baby is due in March, so about 22 months apart. So, you know, hey, for the next however long, we wouldn't have to buy too many extra clothes because we could wear hand-me-downs, and a lot of the toys would be the same, of course.
Right.
And then we could keep the room blue, and they could share a room for a while, and all that kind of stuff. So you know, it's the logistics would be a little bit easier if we had a boy. But I think deep down, a girl, you know, the perfect family, a boy, a girl, mom and dad. But if we have a two boys, that's great. That's just more farm hands around the house. Of course, if we have a girl, I'm sure she'll like the homestead too, and the animals and the tractors and wear her share of overalls around here. So,
well, today's farm fashion, pretty much it's androgynous.
True.
Women wear men's clothes, and I don't, not many men, I guess, wear women's clothes, but they kind of all look the same, don't they?
Exactly. So we'll see. Either way, we'll have a fun time. We'll keep people posted. We got to hear the heartbeat and see the baby just passed a visit,
aww,
which was was a surprise. We didn't think any of that was going to go on being the first visit. We're like, that'll be probably towards Christmas. But so that was a pleasant surprise. I figured you had heard through the grapevine, but the fall garden's going in. We're so glad. I love to work in a fall garden. I mean, the summer garden's fine, but it's just hot and sweaty and gnats and bugs. But a fall garden, let me tell you, it's just so nice to get out there. And this year, this fall garden, Pat, will be the first garden that we've actually done more of a, you know, in the past, we did have the 3-foot rows where we could still get a tiller down the path. But this time I said, you know what, I'm going to use strictly tractor. So basically we harrowed the garden really nice, got it prepared, and then yesterday I marked the rows with the cultivator and went down and made my rows. And then, thank you, babe. And then if a little cool, so we won't have the amount of grass in the garden that we did, you know, last for this spring-summer garden, obviously. But as we have the grass and weeds start coming up in the aisles, then I have it spaced perfectly where I can just drive right down the row, just basically straddle that row of plants, the cabbage, the broccoli, the cauliflower, and take the tractor and just drive it right down that row with the cultivator behind. It'll automatically just kind of cultivate those pathways from weeds and everything, and I'm really looking forward to trying that out this time for the fall garden instead of having to manually get that heavy tiller down there and till the rows to keep the grass out and keep it, you know, nice and aired out. But I can just take the tractor and bzz, drive right down the row. So I'll let you know how that goes this fall with this garden. And,
well, you're turning into a real farmer.
I'm telling you, it's like, we got to try this. And we got this tractor. We have all the implements. I said, we got to do this. I mean, so let's work smarter, not harder, and then we'll try to do this. So I'll let you know how it works. I knew this from previous, but I had posted on my Facebook page about having a straight rows. I said, fact, it is not as easy as it looks, even with
the
tractor.
No, it's not.
To get straight rows. I said, I'm not a drinking man, but you wouldn't know it by looking at my garden rows.
It's true. It's really an art.
Oh, man. I said, I don't know if straight rows is worth a $100,000 John Deere tractor with GPS and autopilot. And when you go to these big farms and you see those rows where straight as straight can be, that's it. They set that GPS, they set that autopilot, and they just push a button, and there that tractor goes, straight rows. Where on these the 1954 Jubilee that I've got, it's basically, okay, I'm going to look at a flag down there, I'm going to look at a tree, I'm going to look at something down that way and try to hold this tractor as straight as I can, but it never happens. Or you go to swipe a fly off your forehead and the thing moves a little bit, or maybe a part of the cultivator grabs a little bit on one side more than the other, and the back end twists a little bit. So you wouldn't think I'm not a drinking man, but if you look at my farm rows, you might think otherwise.
Yeah. You know, even when I'm planting, Whisper, I'll just take a string and even if it's only like 4 feet, it seems, or definitely if it's 8 feet, I just have to put a little string along there, like a kite string, and follow that. I mean, that's not possible to do in fields, I know, but that's how wobbly my rows can be.
Yep. It's one of those things. Yeah, maybe we can just put someone, Picklefish in the chat room said, we need to install laser sights on the tractor. So that's what we'll do. We'll go ahead and get some laser sights on the Gorilla tractor and hook those up with laser guidance on the ground, and then we won't have to worry about it. But I'm still holding out. You know, maybe Jen will let me get that $100,000 John Deere with GPS and autopilot with the air-conditioned cab, and I can just sit up there and push a couple of buttons and let her rip.
Yeah, that's about the same time you're going to get your Learjet. So you can
exactly.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Oh, my goodness gracious. Well, Pat, thank you very much for joining us today. We're going to
my pleasure.
Take a real, real brief commercial break here. We've got Peter Brown in queue. We'll bring him on. And today's topic, we're going to talk all about vitamins and the importance of vitamins with our backyard flock. So stay with us, folks. We'll be back right after this short break.
First State Vet Supply is your one-stop shop to keep your birds healthy and happy. They have a wide selection of medications, vaccines, vitamins, wormers, and much more. Every product comes with specific directions and doses for your small backyard flock. Have questions about a sick or injured chicken? Take advantage of First State Vet Supply's Ask the Chicken Doctor program. For just $25, you can have a personal phone consultation with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. The consultation fee is waived if you purchase a product from First State Vet Supply. Visit them online at firststatevetsupply.com. That's firststatevetsupply.com.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing. And you can find all the great Ware products here. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. I will bring Pat back on live as she is traveling through the mountainous area of California for the Heirloom Festival that's out there. And it's also now time to bring on Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. Always a pleasure to have him on every Monday here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Doc Brown, how you doing?
Hey, Andy, how's it going? Hi, Pat.
Hey, Peter.
Yeah,
Peter,
so
we're talking about one of my favorite subjects today, vitamins and minerals for flocks.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll go through some of it anyway. It's
very good.
And for people.
Now, what's the thing, Pat, I hear you talking about there, men don't wear women's clothes, so I don't know about that.
Well, I don't know much about that either, Peter.
Well, I don't either, but I've seen a few around here and there. Just...
Hey, Peter, I think
some
that...
Some of them are very attractive. You'd never know if you didn't look at their Adam's apple, you know?
Peter, I think that with Pat being in California, she might all of a sudden get accustomed to men in women's clothes. Now, since she's out in California, you know, it's that's a lot of that takes place out there, all over the country. But she might get it.
Well,
might get her,
people should be able to express whatever they want to express, really, as long as they're not doing any harm. What's the harm in it? That's my personal opinion. So, you know, if a guy wants to, I don't know, show his inner yin or yang or whatever it is, let him go ahead and show his feminine side. You ask about cuckoo, but you know the chickens cross dress. You've seen them do that. You know, where a hen will morph into a rooster? Gotcha, don't I?
I'm not even going there, thank you.
They'll start to crow. they'll court the ladies, and they'll even grow hackles, those little neck setters that go up. So.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And what do we usually do with them? I'm not going there. I'll leave that up to your imagination.
Well, they need more vitamins. Let's talk about vitamins.
They need more vitamins?
Yeah.
You think?
It's something. I don't know.
Hey, Andy, my grandson and I were hacking around this weekend looking for a couple of things to do besides what we normally do, and we have a quite large John Deere tractor dealership here, so we were over.
Oh, me too.
Nice.
Not that we're going to Google over one, go gaga over one, but he likes to go over there, and the ones that they leave on lock on occasion, he likes to go up there and pretend he's driving that big John Deere combine and stuff. And it's kind of funny because he can stand – he's fairly tall. He's very thin, but he's tall, but he can still stand up on the inside of the wheel of these things. They're so huge.
Oh, yeah.
But he likes to go over there and do that, and he thinks it's a big deal, and guess it is. When I was his age, it was a big deal. And for me,
you know,
it's nothing but standing.
There's a name for that, for both of you. It's called Meese. Meese, have you heard of Meese? It's
Meese?
Male Equipment Excitement Syndrome. And it's incurable.
I think I got the pill for that.
Yeah. And it's incredibly expensive, and it has caused quite a few divorces. Male Equipment Excitement Syndrome, Meese.
Well, since this is the family show, we can't really elaborate about female equipment excitement syndrome.
Yes, women get it too. I got to tell you, I still am lusting after a backhoe. I love to dig. I'm just a mad mole. She bit me with a backhoe, so it's true.
Funny.
Anyway.
How close are you to San Francisco there, Pat?
I'm above San Francisco, about an hour, up to Sonoma County to visit a Buckeye breeding farm, Buckeye chickens breeding farm. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, you're not far from seeing all the fanfare in San Francisco. Quite a liberal town.
It is. In fact, yesterday after that long flight from Virginia, I pulled over at Vista Point, I think it is, and I walked across the Golden Gate Bridge. I think it'd be great to get some exercise. So I truly had the wind in my hair, and the bridge was bouncing around, but I guess it's meant to do that. I don't know. I kept thinking, is it an earthquake? No, it's just the traffic.
That's... That sounds fun. That would be neat. If I was out there, I would definitely have to do that, take some pictures. That would be a monumental place to go if I was out that way. Monday we plan to make a trip out west, but that's I can't blame you for that. That sounds really fun.
Yeah. Well, it was a huge day. People were biking across the bridge on one side and walking across the other. It was packed. It was absolutely packed. I'd like to spend some time in San Francisco and be a tourist for a while, but... Yeah.
Pat, I saw something online, and I think I'm going to buy it for you, and so you can wear it.
That's going to be good.
It's an allergy bracelet. You know, I'm sure you've seen those. It has the Star of Life on it to let people know it's a medical bracelet, and it says severely allergic to right wing nuts.
That's really bad.
I know it is. But I saw it. I thought, yeah. In fact, I posted
I'm it on. Get a dozen.
I posted it on my Facebook page for all my liberal friends. I was like, hey, here you go, folks. And I'm severely allergic to right wing nuts.
Andy, I didn't know you had any liberal friends.
Oh man.
Yeah, I've got
a few. I've got a few. The ones that are, you know, down to earth and like to and enjoy debate and can take fun in it. Now, there's a few that you mention anything and it goes on both sides, whether they're right or left, and they just get all panicky and get just pure mad and then just delete you and call you names and go off the end and go away.
Yeah. And, For some reason, people, some people anyway, are unable to have a reasonable debate. And if it if it doesn't go their way, they're just not happy, so they will, you know, pull out all stops, you know, lambasting. It's kind of like our political scene, though. I think it's a thing.
Well, it's kind of like what's happened with chickens in some cities, getting them legal.
Yeah.
Just mm-hmm. people go berserk, saying, absolutely not. It's just we're stepping back. It's going back.
Going back to the legalities of the chicken thing, I really feel that in a lot of areas, even here, they don't really have the right to keep people from owning chickens the way they'd like to, even though they do it. For instance, showing here in Delaware, even in Maryland, the only two shows left of any consequence is the Frederick show up in Frederick, Maryland. It's on the other side mm-hmm. of the bay, about two and a half hours from here, depending on how the traffic is. And then Harrington, Delaware, which is just up the road here, about 45 minutes away. And through just the fact of mandatory testing,
right.
they have scared off better than half the people that normally would go to these shows, especially if you're from out of state. Okay.
Yeah.
They've
yeah.
made it
they destroyed the show business
yeah.
in Virginia,
and,
too.
Yeah. If I were a wealthy person, which unfortunately I'm not, I would take them on. They would wish they'd never seen me. And
ooh. They would get someone to subsidize you, Peter. It's like, let them go.
Well, you know, I can't for the life of me, and I know this is not the subject today, but it cuts to all the people who are enjoying the opportunity to raise chickens versus all of those whose opportunity to do so is being hindered or inhibited or taken away for really no good reason other than the fact that somebody doesn't want to put up with what they think are...
It's Ron to highlight Ron.
You know, what they think are things that are obnoxious to them. I've lived in a lot of different areas of the country, and I'll tell you, I've lived right alongside of a lot of obnoxious people over the years, one way or another. If I had the money, and down the road here, as I age a little bit and get a little bit further into things, more into retirement, I may just decide to take them on myself and be my own lawyer and just go to court, because I feel that if you can get a judge that's got half a brain, and that might be difficult, that is just looking at it reasonably. You know, I can show you for, you know, a 10-year span where you've tested us and we've never had the problem, but you guys have always had the problem. If you look at the research, you know, the big avian influenza, we talked about this last week, but if you look at the government knowing full well what this disease could do, but yet knew that it was circulating in the live markets and never did anything about it. And now you want to come down on people who have never been part of the problem only because you want to say that they have the potential to. Well, hell, I mean, every gun owner everywhere in America, has that opportunity. I mean, a guy can pull out a gun tomorrow and go crazy, and you can say, well, gee, Joe was a nice guy. I never thought he'd do that, you know.
We ought to get Michael Moore on this.
You know.
He chicken.
Well, I'm not up for him. He's a moron, in my opinion, but... We need somebody that.
have you seen his movies? Have you actually watched
them? I've just seen him on a couple of shows.
Yeah, have you seen his movies, Peter? Did you
I've
actually watch
talk.
Them?
No, I don't hardly
You've
watch any.
You've seen his movies, have you?
I don't watch any of that stuff because most of the stuff.
Most of the time
with most of those things, they take stuff that isn't really factual and twisted.
You have not seen his movies, so you don't really know.
I know an a-hole when I see one, and we'll keep it clean at that. Okay.
sounds like industry talking about potential diseases in chickens.
What's that?
It sounds like industry saying there's a potential problem there, and we don't really know what we're talking about, but we're gonna have the laws so that you can't have them. I mean, it's kind of anyway. Let's not go there.
Why doesn't he go and get a frickin' job? You know what I mean? He's living off of the fear factor, and I'm a big fan of people reading and learning and everything else. That's why we have libraries all across the country, invested billions of dollars in them, and the amount of people going to libraries and stuff these days are declining, and everybody thinks it's just because of the computer and stuff, and it's more because people just think they can get stuff from guys like him, and they don't have to do the due diligence themselves. So I'm not a big fan of him and a whole bunch of other people like him, so that's a sore spot with me.
Watch his movies first, then judge.
Never. I die first. I die first.
Since we're on this topic a little bit, Pat, are you going to go see 2016?
2016? I haven't even heard what that is. Is that
the Apocalypse? Again, I'm not a movie watcher, but people have been telling me to go watch. There's a movie apparently called, I think it's called 2016, and it's basically a movie producer it's basically a right-wing Michael Moore. And so it's all about proving something about, I don't know, I think it's like so many promises that Obama made that weren't kept and all this kind of stuff. Somebody in the chat room may be able to put the name of the movie in, but several people in on my Facebook pages, you got to go see 2016. I'm like, what is it about? He said it's kind of like a movie that – kind of like what Michael Moore does, but it's all based on Obama facts and things like that. So anyway,
yeah, I'll go see it as long as it's not violent or have fear or terror. I'll certainly watch it.
Yeah, 2016. Yeah. What somebody in the chat room said it was, and like I said, I don't even know. Closest movie theater here is probably about 50 minutes away. So, but anyway, so I guess it works both ways based on what you're.
Maybe it's because of what I do for a living. I seek out my own answers. I don't rely on the news media or anything else. I go and I look for things that point me in the right direction. When I see a poll that says that Congress has an 82% disapproval rating, I can tell you this: you don't have to be a rocket scientist to know that they should all be fired, all of them. Okay, it's real simple. If you were on a job and you got a rating like that in your review every year, your annual review, or however your company that you're working for reviews you, and you got that review, you would be fired. It's that simple. You would be on the unemployment line, but we refuse to do that in this country, and everything is about all this other nonsense that doesn't mean anything. Either doing a good job, I don't care who created what. The ball's in your court. What have you done while you're there? And I'm not picking on anybody in particular. I don't know who I'm going to vote for at this point. Maybe nobody. You know, I don't see a viable candidate either side, as far as I'm concerned, one that's going to really pull this country forward. You know, that's just my
personal
opinion.
Have a dark horse come up from the rear and just be able to, save us all and not be manipulated by the big money.
See, I'm better off looking at it. Save yourself. Screw them. Save yourself. What do you need them to save you for? Save yourself. Run away from them as fast as you can. What have they ever done? What have they ever done that's positive? Think about it. What have they ever done? All of them, collectively. Doesn't matter what party. I'm not talking about parties. Party's nonsense. Doesn't matter. What have they done to help everybody? Nothing. And all the stuff they talk about now, you know, well, we need to spend more money on this, we need to spend money on that, stimulus this, stimulus that. Where the hell do they think the money's coming from? They're going to borrow it.
That's right.
They're going to borrow it. We're no different than the people in Greece and Europe and everything else now that the bill's coming due. Nobody wants to make the cuts there either. You can see the big problem that goes over here. And when somebody like Germany, who's willing to for whatever reason, to get involved and loan them the money, says, hey, you got to do this, this, and this, and they go, we don't want to do that, but we still want the money. It doesn't make any sense. And we're doing the same thing here. So for me,
we are. Big time. I mean, not just a little time.
Yeah, and I don't look at it as a party thing. I look at it as collectively as human beings, as a populace, as a country, as people. I mean, for crying out loud, only 50% or so of the people in the country vote anyway. And we're worried about voter ID cards? The other 50% aren't going to vote anyway. You've got to have a license to drive, for crying out loud. Get out of here.
Maybe we should talk about vitamins.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say I've got an empty chair here, and the president wants to talk about chickens.
Anyway, Pat started it with that Michael Moore crap. It's her fault.
You're
the one out in California, not me.
Oh, me.
Okay, I rest my case.
Me too.
Let's talk about chickens.
Me too. Anyway, vitamins have always been an interesting item to talk about because most people just go ahead and use them and have no idea what any of the nomenclature associated with vitamins means. So I thought that today would be a good day to at least start talking about vitamins, what they do, their role in the health of the birds, and also how to read a package of vitamins. When you get a vitamin pack that has the ingredients on the outside of it, basically how to tell what really is in it, because all vitamin packages are their content is based on a 1 pound sampling. And so if you were to look at a particular package of vitamins, it will tell you how much of a particular vitamin is in there, but it will tell you how much of that is in a 1 pound sample. So if you don't have a 1 pound package in your hand, whatever it's telling you there, you as far as a particular, whether it's vitamin A, vitamin D, or whatever, whatever it's telling you on the outside of that package, unless that package is 1 pound in total weight, you don't have in that package what it says on that package. I don't know if that's making any sense to you, but it's all based on a pound. So if you have an 8 ounce package, and the vitamin A content, let's say, is 6,933,000 international units of vitamin A, it's that much in a pound, half of that for your 8 ounce package, a quarter of that for your 4 ounce package. So that's how you read the outside of the bag, and it is important to a degree. It's not the end all part of it, but generally, the higher those things are to a degree, the better off you are. What it generally means at the end of the day is that you're going to end up putting less of the compound in the water than putting in more to get to a higher concentration.
Isn't it safe to say as well, with vitamins, like many other things, that more is not always better? And even with us humans, and Pat can attest to this probably as the pharmacist, that more is not better, because we're just going to, let's face it, pee out what we're not using, which ends up then being a waste of our money.
That's true and false both, and
okay.
I'll get into that. It's a good statement to bring out. Let me finish first with the nomenclature part of it, because I think it's an interesting thing. It's like talking in gobbledygook, but it's because it's a universally accepted, worldwide, scientific, and it goes to the pharmacopoeia, which Pat is familiar with, USP.
Mm-hmm.
International units are pretty much the same thing, but it's an attempt to get worldwide acceptance of a product or an ingredient so that it is a stable amount. So if you're talking about it, this particular ingredient in Egypt, you're going to be talking about it at the same level in Georgia as you would in Mexico. So that's the whole idea behind it. So then they go on to say on these packages, then they say that this is in international units. And it's another interesting factor, because all international units are not the same. It would lead you to believe that an international unit, in other words, there would be, how could you say this? If you have an international unit that let's say had a value of one, that all international units would then have a value of one. And that isn't true. What an international unit really means, it is a methodology that's used in a laboratory setting to take a pure form of an ingredient. In this case, we're talking vitamins, and then take that pure form of those vitamins and break it down and get its equivalent biological weight. Okay, so the weight for each individual thing, and then the international unit for it is going to change based on its weight. Okay.
Wow. So we really. Is there a big difference between different international units, Peter, or is it sort of
the international
in the ballpark?
I guess I should clarify. International unit part is going to stay
international unit.
Yeah, it's going to stay international units. What's going to change and does change and even changes and can change as new technology comes along, better methods of measuring these things and things like that. For instance, I'll give you a couple of examples here. Vitamin A, it has equivalent weight of 0.3 micrograms per international unit. You see what I'm saying there? The international unit is just a method of describing a particular measurement. Okay. Now, to take that one further, everybody's familiar with grams. That's 454 grams generally in a pound, 28.375 grams to an ounce. And a microgram is equal to 1/1,000,000th of a gram and 1/1,000th of a milligram. So you're not talking a whole lot of stuff here when you're talking the micrograms.
Right. It's the amounts.
It's the amount that they claim then would be in there, and then that gets multiplied out. So if, for instance, if each one has a different weight. See, vitamin E is heavier, okay, a lot heavier. And vitamin D is not as heavy as the vitamin A. Vitamin C is heavier yet. So all of them have a different thing, but they're all based on this international unit method of getting the weight of the vitamin and or whatever substance it may be. There's a lot of things that have an international unit basis. So if you were going to take and you wanted to find out, for instance, vitamin E, one international unit of vitamin E is 0.667 milligrams. So if you look in the health food store, you'll see them on the thing. It'll say vitamin E 100, vitamin E 400, and in a little tiny print, you'll see IU, international units. What it means is it's 400 international units and 100 international units on the other. So if you were to take that and multiply it out times the 0.667, that would tell you how many milligrams are in there. Okay? And so it's just trying to get through the nomenclature on it. It's a lot different than looking at other types of products. Like when you go to the store, everything's in ounces and percentages of fat and so on on the back of a label. So this is just a little bit different. I wanted to, because I get people saying to me, "Well, hey, what the hell is an international unit?" You know, and you have to try to explain it a little bit, and I have to really go and pull back in my brain to try to remember what it's all about. But the weights of each one, I'll be honest with you all, I did look them up, okay, because I don't keep that crap in my head. But the millionth of a gram, that's pretty standard stuff. But it's an interesting thing. So you're not looking at a ton of this stuff being in. I'm looking at a vitamin package now that has almost 7 million international units of vitamin A per pound, okay? And it's only a 6-ounce package, so now what do you do? So then what you do is you take the 7 million divided by 16, come up with a per-ounce international unit, and you can break it down from there. Then it'll tell you, then multiply that times 6, and it'll tell you how many international units are actually in this 6-ounce bag. So it's deceiving when you look at it, because a person can look at it and go, "Whoa, man, almost 7 million units in this bag," and then you don't read that little tiny stuff over that says IU/pound. And so you think you're getting something that's really hyped up when it's okay. It's an okay product. It's not bad at all, for that matter. But my point being, when you look at that almost 7 million, kind of like the difference between getting $7 million in cash and somebody saying, oh, no, we only meant $400,000. Big difference. And that's about how that works out. Okay, I think it's $433 million or something like that. So anyway.
Awesome.
That's how that all comes about. That's what it means. That's what it means to read the front of a vitamin bag. And then we get into classification of vitamins. We've talked about this before on the show and numerous times, and this plays to what Andy just brought up, and I'm glad that he did bring that up. Vitamins fall into two basic classes, those that are fat-soluble and those that are water-soluble. And all this means, water-soluble, fat-soluble, is that these, when they look at a vitamin and determine whether it's fat-soluble or water-soluble, it just means that in fat solvents, that vitamin will break down versus one that's water-soluble that will just break down on its own in water. That's the difference between the two. It's a basic explanation. There are some more complicated things. When you start breaking down vitamins, they go into other compounds within that vitamin structure. It's even a little bit more than I want to know. It's not necessary unless you're in the vitamin world and that's your gig and that's what you do, trying to come up with new compounds or different things that work better. But just know that they work that way in fat-soluble and water-soluble. Now, to get more into Andy's question, what happens when you over-supplement and things like that? But I want to make one statement first. It's my opinion. And while I do sell vitamins and I have some great vitamin packages and things of that nature here, vitamin supplementation isn't necessary as a general rule if you're not breaking other rules that don't interfere with the absorption and so on and uptake of vitamins through the feed. So you can have vitamin toxicity. It generally takes a long time to happen. If a bird or a human were fairly sedentary and were not able to move around and not do much but sleep, eat, drink, and defecate, probably would build up much, much quicker because you're not using the volume of these vitamins. The problem with your fat-soluble vitamins is, and always has been, is that they are not eliminated from the body as quickly as are the water-soluble type vitamins, okay? So what happens then is that when you take in more of your fat-soluble vitamins, and I'll tell you in a second which ones those are, there's basically only four, and they start to build up in different parts of the body. And one of the places that a lot of these fat solubles will build up is, there's two places, basically one more than the other, but the liver. A lot of things park themselves in the liver. And that's why a lot of drugs become toxic. That's why a lot of herbs become toxic, because they get into the liver and they don't get out, similar to, but not the same as sulfa drugs that get into the kidneys and then can't get out. They're trapped there, and then they destroy the kidneys and block the tubules in the kidneys and so on, and then you have kidney failure and so on. The same thing here. They block the little tubes in the liver and cause degeneration of the liver and so on and so forth with vitamin toxicity from that standpoint. So that's what I believe, Andy, I believe that's what your question really was cutting to. So you're always, in my opinion, better off to whether it be human or otherwise, to get all the vitamins, minerals that you need from the food that you eat. Because of the world that we live in and the fast-paced lives that a lot of us lead, where we don't take time for lunch, dinner, breakfast of any good consequence, and they first, certainly with the further processed foods and that kind of thing, a lot of these vitamins become almost eliminated or of such poor quality that they're not worth even having, and then you may get into something on the other side of the fence, which is a deficiency. Okay? But a vitamin is considered to be any organic compound that would be available, and I pointed that out in these international units, available in small amounts in the food and or feedstuffs, food being for humans, feedstuffs being for animals, that are absolutely necessary for metabolism, because they just don't do something for themselves. They do something for the entire body. The addition of vitamins, to the body, makes other things in the body, whether it be amino acids, which are proteins, minerals, and so on, absorb in different ways, or not absorb at all, or absorb partially and create a deficiency there. And I'll go into one of those that will everybody be able to relate to here in a couple of minutes. But your fat-soluble vitamins, your A, D, E, and K, okay? And they will stay with you for a long period of time unless you're burning it up. If you're out there doing a lot of exercise and work and running around, in some cases a lot of stress, a lot of these vitamins will get used up much quicker than they normally would. And if your diet is lousy, you're probably, the average person today, even with a lousy diet, is probably not going to see an outright deficiency in any one of these, but it certainly is possible. In your more poverty-stricken countries, they do see it. They do see it a lot. You've all seen it on TV, these emaciated children and so on and so forth. A lot of that, obviously is diet directly, but it's also vitamins that are deficient. You'll see children standing there. You'll see their legs bowed and all that kind of stuff, and that's usually more than likely, amongst other things, a severe deficiency of vitamin D, which makes the bones more pliable and makes them more rubbery, and the same thing happens in chickens. So what we're looking at then is we're looking at compounds that are complex, that are small, that are absolutely necessary to maintain health and life. The lack thereof, any of these in any for any extended period of time, leads to diseases that we call vitamin deficiency diseases. And so I don't know if I answered your question or not, Andy, but then we get into the water-soluble part of this thing as far as water-soluble vitamins are concerned. That's vitamin C and all of your B-complex vitamins, including B12.
Mm-hmm.
The difference there is that these are soluble in water, and when they get into the body, your body will use what it needs and excrete the rest out, usually very quickly. So, and one way, if you don't believe me, anybody that hasn't done this or heard of it, go get yourself some B-complex vitamins, take them, and then as soon as you go to the bathroom and urinate, male or female, you will smell it in the toilet. Because whatever your body, and it's very quick to for your body. In other words, if you're taking it and you're really smelling it strong, you don't need it because your body's saying, nope, we don't need that, kick it out. Whereas those fat-soluble vitamins, it will use what it needs, and then it will store the rest. And if you're not using up, or your birds are not using up as much as being stored, then down the road you could possibly get into a toxicity situation. And I have to be honest that I've really never seen in modern times now a case of true vitamin deficiency. I'm sure they're out there. I don't see everything that goes on, obviously. But when you have birds that have got coccidiosis, we know that they're going to be deficient in some vitamins eventually. And those things help lead to their demise. The coccidia making the intestine uninhabitable and making it much more difficult for the nutrients to be absorbed through the intestinal wall and the villi. So a bird can be eating and certainly not getting the nutrients that it needs out of its feed. The other thing I wanted to touch on here pretty quick, too, was that with feed, if you go through a lot of feed, that's one thing. That's great. And well, maybe not so great because you got to buy it now and feed's high, but you want to try to keep your feed as fresh as possible, and you want to buy from a supplier who turns over their feed pretty quickly because the longer these things sit mixed in a mixed feed, in a bag in a warehouse, subjected to the heat and the cold and everything else, there is a breakdown of the vitamins. They are relatively fragile to some degree, not near as fragile as they used to be many years ago, but nonetheless they're still fragile to a degree. And the fresher the feed, the more vitamin content. It's no different than getting food at the market that has been shipped in from California versus going down the road and getting it from the farm stand where the guy picked them an hour ago. Similar to what Andy does down where he does on his homestead when he picks his collard greens and stuff, loads them up in the back of the pickup truck and goes wherever he goes to give them away or whatever. You can't beat that with a stick. You know, the vitamins coming out of that are going to be so much better than the ones that were shipped in from California or any other place. I'm not trying to put it on anybody in California. It's just a fact. The deterioration, you know, we get some things here from our CSA, while it's fresh, I've noticed that even that stuff, if we don't get on it and eat it fairly quick, it deteriorates very, very rapidly.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, you don't realize how quickly, and so you got to, I mean, some of the stuff is even a little bit of a revelation to me. It's not that you didn't know it before, but it's a reminder, you know, that, hey, you know, you got to eat this stuff while it's fresh. Otherwise, you might as well just throw it in the trash because it isn't worth anything to anybody.
As opposed to some bread or Twinkies that never seem to go bad.
Well, you know,
that's
the truth. And if you look in those things, you know, the antioxidant stuff that they put in it, the you know, mainly the salt and all that kind of stuff, nothing wants to grow in that. You know.
No, wait a minute.
That's right. Nothing.
Wait a minute, Pat. Now let's analyze this. I eat a Twinkie every day and don't have cancer. Therefore, Twinkies must prevent cancer, right?
Yes. Don't have cancer yet.
That's kind of part of our blockbusters.
That's kind of the science we're getting in some of these areas.
And I am eating healthier, as you all know, and I sprinkle a little bit of lead on my and a little bit of arsenic on my food every day, and I chew a piece of hemlock every day, too.
Yeah, because it's all natural.
It's all natural.
It's all natural, approved by the FDA or whoever, USDA.
It's all natural. So, yeah, no, it's,
so is chicken pox. So natural just kind of become meaningless.
Certainly, I honestly believe I know this to be a fact because I've seen some of the science and some of the things that I'm dealing with now. We will eventually move away from antibiotics for the most part. I think that there's enough people out there worldwide now that want it, even in some of your less wealthy countries that don't want it for their people either. Whether they're just monkey see, monkey do, I don't know. But I will tell you that's the trend I'm seeing when I look at this on a worldwide basis. I get a couple of magazines in here that are on the international scene, and here's the problem. We ran into a problem in this country with ethanol, did we not?
Oh, geez.
I mean, you know, you could beat that horse to death, you know, and the same thing will more than likely happen when we get away from antibiotics. And dollar and cents wise, at the end of the day, from my perspective, from where I see things, how they go, this ethanol thing. I mean, it was predictable. Okay. Well, so will it be when we go away from the antibiotics and go to other things? Because what we're looking at is a lot of essential oils and stuff. And when you start looking at things that are effective, that are used as spices and things like that. I mean, since there's a big thing been on turmeric, my wholesale price of turmeric has doubled.
Really?
Oh, yeah, it's gone crazy. It's gone crazy. Okay? Now, what do you think is going to happen to, they're looking at, and I'll just tell you this, safflower oil, peppermint, ginger, oregano. Oregano shows very, very good hope, by the way. As a matter of fact, I've got some really super product in here. The other one is the black peppercorn. What do you think it's going to do to those spices if this catches on a commercial basis, which it may eventually? There is a huge company that has an organic free-range flock in Germany, and they've gone to the oregano in their free range flock because it's beneficial. It's helped. You know, how long have I been telling people on this show, okay, if you want to help mitigate your problems or your chances for fowl pox, just go buy some mosquito barrier. I don't sell it. I was listening yesterday while I was riding around running some errands. I listened to, and I'm not a big gardener, but I like to listen to the thing. You learn every day, no matter what you listen to. There's a guy by the name of Mike McGrath, NPR Radio, out of Philly, I think. And he was talking about mosquito barrier being used to mitigate bugs and mosquitoes that this guy had. A wet area in his yard that just didn't seem to want to dry up and everything else. They gave him some tips, but he said, hey, go on, you know, and the guy wasn't online, so he told him a couple other products he might be able to buy that are similar and what have you. But they work. You know, not everything that's natural is a non-working item. What you have to watch out for with these things is when you start putting them into food that you're going to eat, and then, you know, you want to look at the benefits of it. I mean, isn't that the problem we have with antibiotics now? You put them into birds, and you've got withdrawal times for eating the carcass, but we've got a big, huge problem with eating the eggs, do we not? Okay? And we've been over that 100 times, okay? But, you know, yet we take this product that we deem to be natural. We have no idea what it's going to do inside the bird's body, other than the fact that people say they use it and everything else, and they don't die from it. Well, that's a good thing. You know, that's a good thing. But scientifically looking at it, you don't know what it's doing. Nobody has any long-term studies of any of this kind of stuff. So it's good to see these things coming along. And I truly do believe that if all of these things pan out the way they're looking now, you will eventually see, because people are working on it all over the world. And some of the products that I just mentioned, if you go to the store now, they're high enough now to buy them. So what happens when that market starts getting bought up to go into animal feed all over the world?
Right.
You'll go in there and what you thought pepper was a dollar a can is going to be $15 a can or whatever. You know, I mean, and we'll be moaning and groaning. I will say this to you, and I'll go back and I'll say the same thing. When I went somewhat green here in this office with packing materials, okay, the bag of packing chips that I use, because they are all basically natural product made from cornstarch, they break down. It's a great product. They're three times heavier, and they're three times the cost. And that's the way it is. And what are you saving at the end of the day? What they call the carbon footprint? Well, on one side you are with the oil that went into the other chips, the styrofoam-type chips or whatever they were, and now you've got these all-natural ones, but you're putting three times the weight out on the road on a truck, so where's your carbon footprint getting smaller, you say? I'm convinced you can't win, kind of like when I went to a Chevy Chevette back in the 80s trying to get around the gas prices and everything else. Boy, that was a compromise, I'll tell you. You know, you just can't win. You know, it's the same thing now, going out and buying a Chevy Volt for $50,000 to save a few dollars at the gas pump. I don't get it.
You had a Chevy Chevette?
Oh, black four-door Chevy Chevette. Yes, I did.
Well, that's funny.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I'll tell you what, other than it being a little car with no real suspension in it to speak of, put well over 100,000 miles on it, and when I sold it, it was still clicking. So... You couldn't keep tires on the front of that thing because it only had, if my memory serves me correctly, like the caster camber was either you picked the shock up and you rotated 180 degrees or you rotated 180 degrees the other way. That was your basic front end alignment with that thing. And, but, yeah, no, never again. No, I wouldn't do that. So I don't think you can win at the end of the day, dollar and cents-wise. I really don't. Now, if you want to look at it from a nutritious side, not having the antibiotic resistance problems and those kinds of things, I think there's certainly a value there, no question about it. But if you're looking at it, I will tell you this. I bought this product from Europe, came in here. It's an essential oil. Had a hell of a time getting it in here. Finally got it here with the shipping and everything else. And now I just got a bill in the mail for the duties on it coming in. See, there's a tax on everything, folks. Okay? I've got to get $60 a bottle for this to even come out on it. And we're only in the infancy of this stuff. So, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I don't see, you know, how it's all going to work from that standpoint. But it is being worked on. There are things out there that are effective. And I, like I said to people, I will have some of these available by the first of the year. And only things that I know that there's science there to back it up. That's the big thing for me. It's got to have some sort of provenance to it, so that we can look at it and say, okay, there's been a trial done on 100,000 birds here. At least we know it works. See, I can show you that stuff with the turmeric. There's been more and more studies done on that.
Mm-hmm.
I can show you on the human side where that stuff, you know, really does work, and it's good. I can show you on the, you know, where it's better off. It's potentiated with the bioperine, which is the black peppercorn. All these things are important. They're all important at the end of the day. And I'm not saying any of the herbal stuff is bad, per se. I'm just saying that you need to be careful. You know, I was looking at some St. John's wort stuff last night, and there was a woman espousing the virtues of this product. And she had a child who got a finger caught in the door or something and took the finger right down to the bone at the tip of the finger or something and everything else, and she gave that child some St. John's wort, and to her claim is immediately the pain ceased. Maybe so. We know it has some hallucinogenic capabilities as well, all right? And I'm not an expert on the stuff. Believe me, I'm not. But I'm just trying to learn all I can learn about it. Took the child to the emergency room, and the anesthetic wouldn't work because of the St. John's wort. So, you know, I don't see where you really mitigated the thing. You know, you might have stopped him from hopping and skipping around the living room or wherever he was when he jammed the finger up, but you created another problem. And that's the kind of thing that I want to stay away from, and that's why we need the science to be done. You know, going back and looking at things when a company is able to take something and patent it so that they have some way of recouping their money, you're going to see more and more of this stuff. And that's the same thing. I don't know, Pat, you're still on the line there, if you looked up that fruit flow at all, but the reason they're out with that product and pushing it and everything else, they have a patent on it.
Ah.
See, they have a patent on that part of that tomato that they were able to find that had this capability, and they have a patent on it. And if they're smart, they'll enforce that patent left and right, just like Bioperine does for theirs. If you've got a product out here and you claim it's got Bioperine in it, you better have a contract with them, I guarantee you, because they will go through your shorts real quick. And but that's the only way you protect your stuff. But if we see more and more patents, we'll see that. I was involved in some technology early on, and a couple of years ago with some technology out of China. It looked very, very promising. These were vitamins that were in another vehicle that were going to absorb in a different way, and just didn't pan out. So, and that turned me off in getting involved with anything from China. But in all seriousness, you know, there's a lot of good things coming down the pike. We just have to be patient and be smart about what we do, and that's what I try to put out here, put out what I know to be the truth about something. Somebody else knows something else that wants to share it with me, can contact with me, and if you've got science behind it, I'm all ears. I'm all ears for any of it. But
right.
Just don't tell me it's good because it's natural, because I'm not buying it.
Mm-hmm.
But getting back to our vitamins, Andy, so if we look at this fat-soluble, water-soluble, again, that's based on the fat solubles being able to be broken down by solvents that would break down fat, and the others being soluble in water. Now, when we look at vitamin A is not necessarily just hanging around in the environment. It has to be synthesized by the bird's body from carotenoids or carotene and things like that. Now, it is one of the most toxic of all of the vitamins, and it is one that needs to be not played with too much unless you've got a bird that's really debilitated, not eating, or had a bad bout of intestinal problems, whether it be worms, cocci, or enteritis, or something of that nature. And once that has been mitigated, you come back and you get some vitamins for a little bit till the bird picks up and perks up and gets rolling again. And the reason for that is that 90% of all of the vitamin A that comes into a bird's body that they don't use is stored in the liver.
Okay.
And that is important to remember. Some of it's stored in the brain and other tissues of the body, but a huge portion of it is stored in the liver. So then we start talking about, you know, liver problems and things of that nature. Alfalfa is a good source of it. Most of your green leafy things are good sources of the vitamin A. Deficiency of vitamin A, we associate it with in chickens a lot of the time with blindness, eye problems, slow growth. The birds don't do well. They'll go away from eating their feed. There'll be skin issues, lesions on the skin. It can be anywhere from the head to the feet. Doesn't really matter. So that's your vitamin A, your most toxic basically of the the fat soluble vitamins. The next one I think that is probably more important to people who raise poultry is vitamin D. Now, vitamin D is not available in feedstuffs in abundance. Generally, in most feeds, all vitamins, I should say to you before we go on, are supplemented in the feed. That's one of the reasons I wanted to say, before, go to a feed dealer who's moving a lot of feed. I would be concerned with somebody who has organic feed. I would want to know how often they get a truckload in or how fast that stuff is moving through the place, because there are not as many people organic these days as there are people just growing chickens. So the regular chicken feed, due to cost and what have you, is going to move out fairly quickly in relation to the organic type feeds. They all have to add some sort of a vitamin pack to the feed mixture when they mix this feed. So the fresher the better, and that keeps all the ingredients in the feed, all the vitamins and stuff fresher and more available to the birds. But vitamin D is intimately associated with the uptake of calcium and phosphorus in the bird system. This breaks directly to the strength of the bird's bones. This goes directly to the strength of the eggshell, or whether or not you'll have an eggshell at all. We know that the calcium phosphorus ratio, when it gets out of control or out of sync in relation to the bird's availability of vitamin D3, we end up with birds that have rubber eggs. Eggs that are, you can almost see through the shell. The shells are paper thin, crack. Some of them never even make it out. It's one of the bigger problems, too, because this will be associated with birds that may lay that egg, and then the egg breaks, and then they start eating the egg. So, one bad problem leads to another, and then you start the egg-eating problems on top of that. So, you want to see a calcium phosphorus ratio of 2-1. It's usually set up in your feed. We do give calcium in the form of oyster shell, free choice. And generally, if a bird needs it, they'll eat it. They generally do not eat it if they don't. And I don't know what turns that on and off in their body, other than the fact that they eat it and it's good for them, but they know kind of when to eat it and when not to eat it. So. They need the calcium and the phosphorus, and they need the vitamin D3 in order to keep away from the soft-shelled eggs or the thin shelled eggs and so on. The stronger the eggshell is, the better the egg itself is. The healthier the egg ends up being, the more eggs you have to sell. Checked eggs, cracked eggs, broken eggs don't bring in any money. So it behooves you to make sure that your flock is good and healthy. And some of the things that you can do to mitigate this particular problem is to make sure that the intestinal health of the bird is good. We talked about probiotics the other day. We talked a few minutes ago about coccidiosis. Coccidiosis certainly could lead to this problem. Deal with problems associated with soft-shelled eggs almost on a weekly, daily basis. Somebody's emailing me, calling me about a problem with soft-shelled eggs or what they call rubber eggs. So it is out there. There are other skeletal problems that come along with the vitamin D3 deficiency. I saw this firsthand years ago when I was a manager of a farm upstate New York, and we had a load of feed come in, several loads of feed actually came in that were deficient in vitamin D3, and we had a flock in peak production, and we ended up with rickets in those birds. And then you could actually, upon postmortem examination, take a look at these birds and see where the ribs had been broken and then had healed themselves. And when you do a postmortem on a bird, you'll look at the rib. It's like any other animal. It's pretty much smooth all the way down to where it goes into to the rest of the body. And down towards the bottom, you'll see this little nodule, and you'll see them on almost every rib. At one point in time, the rib was broken, and it's like a little weld. That's how I describe it. It's a little like a little weld where the calcium then came back to it and fixed it. And so we see a lot of that. You can see the curvature in the legs and that kind of thing. So that these are real problems. They're out there. They're still around. People still have problems with them. And most of it's caused by other disease problems that have been left unchecked and unresolved. And that leads to larger problems with these vitamins not being absorbed properly, or you get the calcium-phosphorus ratio itself can block the absorption of the vitamin D3 just as easily as a coccidiosis can keep it from being properly absorbed through the intestinal wall. So, again, it goes back to keeping a healthy flock, doing the due diligence, and you know, looking at everything. And if you get one soft-shelled egg or one egg that's thin-shelled, that's one thing. But when you start getting a whole bunch of them, it's time to look at the intestine. It's time to look at the feed. It's time to maybe supplement the birds with a vitamin compound. And that's what they're there for. They're there to be used not necessarily on an everyday basis, but they're there to be used to supplement times when birds are under stress, like this long, hot summer that we had. Birds sure are not going to generally eat as much as they normally would, and vitamin supplementation is usually indicated there after disease, sometimes during the course of disease, depending on what it is, and that kind of thing. So that's the second one in the out of the four fat solubles.
Mm-hmm.
Did you want to go on, Andy? Or?
We can. Let me take a break, and then whenever you get to kind of a stopping point, I've just got two comments, or two questions, rather, that have been posted that I'd like to share with you. So
why don't we do this? When you come back, we'll go to them, and then we'll pick up next week where we're leaving
off.
How's that? Fair enough?
That sounds like a plan, absolutely. Sure. Folks, we're talking to Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of First State Vet Supply, talking all about the importance of vitamins and the delivery methods of those. And when we come back, we'll have a couple of questions from some Facebook fans and maybe take a couple out of the chat room. So if you're in the chat room, you can go ahead and just send me a private message, a question if you have for Peter Brown, the Chicken Doctor, a situation you may be going through now. We'll try to get that on the air when we return after this short break.
When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea. Technology you can trust.
You have the chickens, the coop, and the run, but do you have the egg cartons? Don't put your beautiful farm fresh eggs in any old used grocery store egg carton. Impress your friends with your very own custom labeled egg cartons from eggcartons.com. They have a large selection of custom egg cartons, stamps, and labels to choose from. Pick out your new custom egg cartons at eggcartons.com. That's eggcartons.com.
Treats for chickens. Health and happiness for your modern backyard pet chicken. Healthy pet chicken basics. Non-toxic bug relief. Treats. Organic snacks and more. All created with your backyard pet chickens in mind. At Treats for Chickens, we treat your chickens well. Find us online at treatsforchickens.com or ask for us in your local farm and feed store or favorite pet shop. That's treatsforchickens.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, hens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
And you can find all the great Ware products here.
Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry. From rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams, Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
This looks like a job for
Super Chicken.
You get the super sauce. I'll don my super suit.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
All right. Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Our guest today, of course, every Monday, Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. Let me get over here to the good old Facebook page here, and a combo question here from, I believe it's Hallie. She's at work now. We'll have to listen to the archive later. I'm new to chickens. I got a trio of Dorkings. The bottom of a hen's foot was skinned up pretty good in transport on Saturday. I cleaned with peroxide, lathered with neoprene, and then bandaged. Of course, you will not keep it bandaged. Also found that they have lice. Sprinkled her and the surroundings with DE, but need to know what else I should order to help with this situation. So a twofer here. We've got a skint foot that was done in transporting, and then we've got a lice issue as well.
Okay. Well, the skinned foot, it depends on, you know, how deep the lacerations or scrapes or whatever are. If they're just superficial on the bottom of the foot, you know, keeping it clean, keeping her in a clean pen. A lot of these small dog crates, depending on the size of the bird, you know, will work fairly well, and then you can change the, you know, the bedding accordingly. As far as they're keeping a dressing on, you can almost forget it. They just won't do it, and it's kind of like a horse. You know, try to help them, and then they beat the thing off and tear it off and so on and so forth. So it's pretty difficult from that standpoint. I mean, it is doable. You can make some different things. If that person would send me an email at chickendr at firststatevetsupply.com, I could send her the article on Bumblefoot, and then she can at least have an idea of what she might want to do there. Or if she wants to send me a picture of the foot, clear pictures only, otherwise they're wasted.
Right.
If they're not clear and if they're out of focus, it doesn't do me any good. It's tough enough to look at it in a picture. If it's severe or if it's going to warrant a medication, then cephalexin is the product, and she'll need to contact me directly to get that. As of yet, I don't have it on the website. But that would be an antibiotic of choice for that. Or you could use the doxycycline, which she can get off the website. As far as the lice are concerned, if they're trying to go more on the natural side, I would suggest the poultry protector spray. It's a real good product, and it doesn't. There's no harm to any children that may be involved. There's no harm to her. There's no harm to the bird, and you can use it over and over and over, and it should mitigate the problem. As far as that's concerned, just a note. You know, I don't know this person from a hole in the wall, and obviously yep. She's a newbie, and that's great. Glad to have her aboard. But you know, we've said it before on this show that. You need to really look birds over when you buy them, right there at the place you're picking them up at, and don't be afraid to say, hey, they got lice. This isn't what I'm up for. Because now you're bringing that problem home to your own place, and now you've got to deal with it where you know, if you had some real good birds to start with that didn't have this particular problem, you wouldn't have to deal with it. But that's what I would do. The diatomaceous earth, I don't think in the long haul will take care of the problem all by itself. But it's an all natural product. You've got it. I would do it, and I would certainly make a dust box for them to dust themselves in, as far as that's concerned. But I certainly would try the poultry protector spray on them, and see if that doesn't mitigate that particular problem. The foot problem is a little bit different. But if they send me an email. I will be glad to give them that information and go with that from there.
Perfect. The other one is from Jennifer, and I'll chime in here, and maybe you can have some experience with this as well. It says, are there any suggestions for keeping wild birds out of the coop? I have wrens that have nested in the rafters of my coop. They fly in and out using the pot door, which is left open all day for chickens to come and go. If I had that problem out here in the back with my wooden coops with the rafters and whatnot, I would try to eliminate, nip it in the bud as soon as I saw them. You know, hey, they get three pieces of pine straw up there or whatever trying to make the nest. Man, it's gone. I'm knocking it down. Yeah. Fly back in. I'm there, you know, a day or 2 days later. They have a little bit more mud, a little bit more nesting material. I'm knocking that down. And then they may get the point that, hey, this is not working. I've got to find another place.
Yeah.
That's what I would do if it was my backyard. You know, definitely try to find the problem before now that it exists. I'm not an expert, so I don't know if there are any laws saying that you can't disturb the nest of a wren. I do not know, but I would try to nip that in the bud before it started.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
To go one step further, I think if this were a problem that I was experiencing, and it may be soon because I'm very close to doing that. We're getting closer and closer. The chicken coop here is coming along very well. The interior is almost done. Should be done by tomorrow. And should have electric in by the following week, so we'll see how that all goes. But we're making good progress. but what I would probably do temporarily is make it so that the birds can't get in the coop at all. Close the pop hole door up, put a piece of something over it for now, whatever. And then I know that that's a place for your birds to go safety-wise and everything else, but maybe make a place for them to be somewhat safe outside, place where they can get under something, get away from any predators and that kind of thing, and deny access to the coop by the offending birds here and see if you can't discourage them to go mm-hmm. somewhere else. It's a tough problem. I don't know about other places, but even gas stations, you know, have a problem with birds coming in and nesting and stuff. And there's one here that has put up these, they look like plastic spikes all along the beam so that they can't sit down.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, and it's another thing we have problems here with on some of the big power lines and stuff with bald eagles making nests and osprey making nests and that kind of stuff. And they've kind of mitigated that by putting a cone-type device over top of the pole so they can't put their nests
mm-hmm.
in. So it's you have to try to outthink them, and you have to try to. Yeah, it's not easy, you know. But I would try to deny, because they're going in there to make their nest. They're going in there to get food and everything else, whatever they can get. I can't think of any other way other than, you know, the two ways that, yeah. that we've come up with here. The constantly taking the nest down will certainly mitigate that. The other thing you can do if you don't feel comfortable, you know, with keeping the birds outside and denying your own birds access through the pop hole, I would then put netting up so that they can't get in the rafters at all, and then take care of any space that's down low where they might set up shop and deny them access to a nesting area that way. And that should work fairly well.
A listener had posted in the chat room that, you know, kind of like pops into my head, like I used to work at a grocery store, and they would have these kind of long plastic strips where you could easily walk through and out, but it would keep other things out. They said maybe you could possibly hang some plastic strips over the door where the larger birds like your chickens could, you know, maneuver their way in, but mm-hmm. the little flying birds could not. So,
yeah.
Hey, maybe you want to try that as,
yeah,
as
and,
well.
And again, that goes to whether your chickens will walk through it or not.
Right.
You know, some might, some may not. And, you know, it's a trial and error thing. I would try any mm-hmm. one of the three things. They're all good answers when you come right down to it, because you got to try to do something to mitigate these birds and get them out of there. And, you know, short of you know, I don't think you can, you know, even if you could shoot them, you wouldn't want to. And if you did, you know, you'd be shooting them forever. So that's not an option at all. So I think these are better options, and they're not harmful, you know, to anybody that I can see.
Correct.
I would look at any one of these three options. I think they're three or four options. I think they're going to work out fine. You know, some are more of a pain in the neck than the other. If you don't have netting, you got to go buy it. You know, and then you got to buy netting that's small enough so that they don't get through it. And you got to put it up. And you know, it's one
right.
thing after another. So I think I would try either, you know, maybe use the netting thing as a last resort if you can't. But certainly going in and taking out any nests that are there, I'd be up for that. That would probably be my first line of defense, too.
Okay. Poet's wife in the chat room says, hen not laying, feels cool, comb is floppy and slightly purplish, no obvious injuries, eating very little, put a cap full of apple cider vinegar in their water. What's next?
How long have they been doing that?
Let me see. She's listening live, so how long? Let me see what we got, and we'll type it back. So she's listening live. So we've got the hen feels cool, floppy comb, slightly purplish comb, no obvious injuries, just a couple of days now, two, 3 days.
And no improvement in the eating? I think what I would do is put 4 teaspoons of apple cider vinegar, because that's the proper amount, in a gallon mm-hmm. of water. Make it mm-hmm. fresh every day and give that to that particular bird. The cyanosis in the comb, which is the darkening of the comb, is an issue. Sometimes it's gut-related. Sometimes it's a respiratory issue.
Mm-hmm.
Don't have enough information, really, to look at that. But, you know, she doesn't mention the droppings, so we need to know what the droppings look like. If she wants to shoot me an email at chickenbr@firststatevetsupply.com, you know, we can talk about. I've been behind on emails, phone calls, and all that kind of stuff, and some of it just isn't going to get answered. But if she, you know, puts in the thing that she, you know, asked on the show, we'll get taken care of.
And that was four.
Four teaspoons per gallon.
Per gallon, gotcha. Okay, got it. She was asking that last second. And then we have, let's see, can vitamin D3 still be a problem with hens that have access to the outside? And if supplement D3, if we supplement with D3, how much?
Usually, when we do this, we like to supplement with all three of the fat-soluble vitamins. I know there's four, but we don't usually supplement with vitamin K unless there's an issue relating to bleeding or blood-related type issues. So vitamin A, D, and E powder is available in the web store, and we usually put a quarter of a teaspoon in a gallon of water.
Got it.
It's hard to say, if they need supplementation, if they're outside. I would look hard at what we're feeding them. A lot of folks have a tendency to give a lot of treats and things like that. And I was thinking about this the other day. A lot of people will give a lot of acidic type things and change the pH of the gut. Then they pull it away, and now you've got a problem. And then some of the birds end up getting sick because you've taken away the acid that was there in the gut that was really protecting them. And a lot of people do this with tomatoes, during the tomato season when the tomatoes are really rocking and rolling. They got too many of them, and nobody wants them, so they throw them in the garden, and the birds go in there and they eat them, put them right in there for the birds. While it's not necessarily going to hurt them, it can upset the balance of the intestine by what they eat. So, if that's happening, I don't know the history of this particular flock on this particular question. Won't hurt to supplement, once in a while, maybe once a week if you're not sure of things. Supplement for a little bit, see if it makes any kind of difference in the ability of the birds to lay the eggs and then also in the eggshell quality. And that'll tell you if you were, if I did it once or twice a week for 2, 3, 4 weeks, didn't see any improvement, I don't think I'd spend the money.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Next week we'll get into we'll go through vitamin E and then we'll go through all the other vitamins as quickly as we can. I apologize
Super.
For being a little bit political before. I normally don't do that, but
people
struck
long
a nerve.
Time. Yeah,
you
long
struck
time.
A nerve with me with that clown. So,
long time listeners of the show absolutely know that hey, we are all human and we all get on a rant every now and then and have fun with it. And they understand it. They expect it on occasion, and it's bound to happen on in the chat room as well. As on the radio show, but no harm, no fouls, no pun intended. But we have a good time. And like I said, me and Pat, we disagree on quite a few things, but she's been coming back for, about 3 years now and co-hosting the show with me. And we yank each other's change whenever we can. But we have that relationship to where we're still good friends. We still carry on. I know I've lost a few just because they just, it's my way or the highway or, they're just, I enjoy debate. We have fun with it on Facebook people. Like my sister's one of them. My sister, boy, you mention anything, and she just off on a tirade of annoyingness, and she just can't have a good fun family debate if we're watching TV or mention something in the news or whatever. It's just she just takes it so personal, and she just can't grin and bear it. So we have fun with that, me and Pat. So no need to apologize there. That's what we're all about. And, all one big happy family. So, Doc, thank you for coming on. We
My
always
pleasure.
Appreciate it, and we'll look forward to seeing you here next Monday.
My pleasure.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye.
All righty, folks, and as we say, if First State Vet Supply doesn't have it, you don't need it. And you can visit them online at firststatevetsupply.com, firststatevetsupply.com. Lots of great products, lots of great experience backing up those products. Send them over an email. You need to get in touch with Peter Brown, chickendr@firststatevetsupply.com. And again, he's just said he's backed up a little bit. Hopefully he'll get to you, chickendr@firststatevetsupply.com. And also there you can find the great Carefree Enzyme products we've been talking about lately. We've had Patrick on the air a couple of times talking about the poultry protector that was just brought up again about dealing with mites and lice. All naturally, no egg withdrawal period with the poultry protector. And then we also last week with Patrick and Dr. McRae talked about the nasties that could be in your water, no matter how often you clean your waterers or your fountains, and the importance of the water protector that Carefree Enzyme has that also is carried at First State Vet Supply. So that's going to wrap up another great show here today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We hope you enjoyed it, took lots of notes. Don't forget, tomorrow we'll be broadcasting live out there in California with Pat and Jeanette Berenger with the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy at the Heirloom Festival out in California. And then Wednesday, we hope to have Toby with Crazy K Farm on as well. Thursday, we've got Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine, this Thursday about our homestead show, talking how to preserve apples the old-timey way, and then another fun Friday. So thank you very much for tuning in today. Love you all, and we'll see you tomorrow right here on Blog Talk Radio, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Have a great day, everybody. I'm heading back out to the garden and doing a little more fall planting.